Now, we're going to think together for a few minutes about the first story that we've just heard, about what happened, and about what we can learn from what happened in that story. And I'm going to ask some of those people to come back to help us for a few minutes. So we can see this story was a story about people from two different countries. One of those people was Naaman, who came from Syria. So we'll put Naaman over that side, so we can see Syria over there. And the other one was, another important person was Elisha, who came from Israel. So Elisha's going to come up here, and we'll make this side the Israel side. Now, we'll come to some of the others in a minute. But first of all, let's think about Naaman over here. Now, who can remember? What was Naaman's job? What did he do? Leah? Right, he was. He was a soldier, and he was a great warrior, and he won battles for the king, we're told. In fact, he was commander of the king's army, wasn't he? Can't get much higher than that if you're a soldier. But unfortunately, we know that Naaman had a problem. Do you remember what his problem was? Denny? He had a disease. He had a disease, yes. What kind of disease? Do you remember? Skin disease. Sometimes the one that we call leprosy. And that was a nasty kind of skin disease, because if you had leprosy in those days, there was no way to cure it. So anybody who had leprosy was in big trouble. And Naaman was certainly going to lose his job, and he was going to be sent away from his family altogether because people were afraid of catching leprosy. There wasn't a cure for it. But then we have somebody else important in the story, and that is a young servant girl from Israel. So let's put our young servant girl in the middle here. Now, what did the young servant girl tell Naaman's family that would help with that problem of leprosy? No, she didn't know that yet. That's coming later. Leah? That's what they did. They went to a place to get it sorted, but it wasn't going to be the king who got it sorted. Who was the one who managed to get it sorted? Do you know?
The prophet.
The prophet. It was Elisha who was going to get it sorted. Although they went via the kings. Elisha in Israel was a prophet there, and he served God, and he was the man who was going to sort the problem. Now, Naaman got ready to go, and when he got ready to go, he prepared some things to take with him. Who can remember what he took? Very good. Yes, he took silver, gold, and changes of clothes. And as well as that, he went to the king and he took that letter that you were talking about. He took all of those things. And then he went all the way to Israel to see Elisha. And when he got to Elisha's house, what happened then? Well, Lee's going to tell us a whole story here. Go on, tell us a bit more then.
Was it that Elisha told him to go into the water and dunk himself seven times, but he didn't answer the door to him and
Naaman got lost? Right, very good. Elisha did tell him to go and wash in the River Jordan seven times and Naaman got cross because Elisha didn't answer the door. Elisha didn't go. Who told him? Who actually went and gave the message? Andrew. Yeah, you. Who are you? Elisha's servant. Elisha's servant then was the one who actually took the message. So Naaman wasn't happy, was he? Now, why do you think Naaman got so cross? Was he expecting something quite different? Do you remember what he was expecting, Leah?
He was expecting
something. No, I don't think he was even necessarily expecting a medicine. He was certainly not expecting that Elisha would not go and speak to him himself, was he? What was he expecting? He was expecting some kind of wonderful miracle. He was expecting God to do something exciting. And all that happened was that Elisha sent his servant and said, go and wash in the local river. So no wonder Naaman wasn't very happy. And he complained, didn't he? He said, what about the rivers in my country? Aren't they good enough? I've come all the way to Israel. Why do I want to go to the River Jordan and wash in that one? He was a proud man. He was an important man. He thought that there was something better for him. He didn't want to get cured that way. But he did want to get cured, didn't he? So then, who had to persuade Naaman to do as Elisha had told him? Do you remember? Yeah, right. Leah had to persuade him. And who were you, Leah? Right. So fortunately, Naaman listened to what his servant said and did what he'd been told. He got the message. And only then did he go and wash in the river, and then he was cured. He was clean. Now, his servant also talked lots of gifts that we've mentioned, and once he was better, he intended to give those gifts to Elisha. And he tried to give them to Elisha, but the story goes on a little bit further than we acted out here. And when Elisha was offered the gifts, maybe you can see at the end of the story there. Did Elisha accept them? How about one of the people behind who's reading the end of the story? No, he didn't, did he? He said, no, definitely not. Elisha knew that God had healed Naaman, and Naaman couldn't pay for his healing, no matter how much silver, gold, changes of clothes and all of those things. So we've got three main people here from the story. What do you think we can learn, first of all, from the young servant girl in the story? Do we have to wait until we are grown up, older people, to tell God about other people and how God can help them? Do we? No answer from the youngest people. Do you need to wait, JC? No, you don't, do you? You don't need to wait. You can start right now when you're young. I might be wrong, but I think Denny might be the youngest of the three we've got here today in the play. If not, you're the second youngest, I think. You can start when you're very small. You don't have to wait to follow God's way and to help other people and to be brave enough to tell them that God loves and cares for them too. You can start right where you are and right now. So we learn something from the servant girl. Now, let's think about Naaman. Let's think and see if we can learn anything from him. Is it important to obey God and to do what God asks us to do, even if we don't really like it? Is it important? Yeah, I think so. Do you think it's important, Naaman? Very important. If you don't do what God asks, God can't help you. God has plans for each one of us, and we do have to do things God's way. Otherwise, we ourselves are not going to benefit from those plans. So there's another important lesson from Naaman. And let's think about the last lesson from Naaman and Elisha on the other side. Naaman and Elisha, just come this way. Come and join us. Okay, when we think about what happened there, is it important, do you think, to thank God and to thank other people for what God does? Is it important to say thank you? Yes. Did Naaman want to say thank you? Yes, he did. He prepared all those gifts and presents and things. But then the hard question sometimes is, how can we say thank you? How do we say thank you to God? Is it by just giving money? No? Did you get your gift accepted? No. Elisha, you said no. That's no good. It's not enough just to be giving money. It's not enough just to be giving presents, even if they're very big presents, like the ones that were taken. And Leah's told us the whole list of all the things. What we have to do is to thank God. We can thank God in our prayers. We can thank God most of all, and most especially by loving him, by worshipping him, and by following him in every part of our lives, even in the parts where it's a bit hard and you may not like what the lesson is. Okay, thank you very much, all of those people. I want to share with you the story this morning of how I first discovered and read Psalm 111, verse 5. It was while I was teaching at Goldie College, and it was all to do with the fact that at a boarding school, one of our constant preoccupations was to keep 300 normal, healthy teenagers well fed. Now, those of you who've had to feed, particularly if you've had to try and feed teenage boys, I think you'll sympathise with that problem. It's not an easy task. And if anything goes wrong with the food supply, that's the first thing that you're going to have complaints about. We had mainly to rely on rice and navy biscuits, which had to be ordered from Honiara, about 200 miles away, and come by sea. And sometimes we were able to buy sweet potato from some of the local villages if they had some to spare. Well, if the boat came regularly, and if the orders were on the boat, then everything was okay. But if the boat broke down, or if the weather was bad, or if we had some other kind of problem, then we had immediately a problem with food supply. On a small coral island, with no good soil, you can't possibly grow enough food to feed 300. Well, one weekend, we came to what was really the end of our food supply. Our stock of rice had been diminishing for quite a while because, unfortunately, the regular boat just hadn't come. And this meant that it was not only the school that was without food, but it was also local shops didn't have any rice to sell. They got theirs off the same boat. And local villagers were using their own sweet potato because they didn't have rice to buy either. So there wasn't any extra to sell to us. We tried all ways to find more food locally. But on the Friday, we'd just reached that point of no return. We didn't have enough food for the weekend meals, and we couldn't just send the students home, even if there had been transport available, which there wasn't, But we couldn't just send them home because some of them would have to travel up to a week to get home. And you couldn't possibly send them off without any food for a week to go home. So we were at that point where, what do you do next? And it was at that point when the headmaster suddenly said he needed to go away for the weekend and left me to run the school. Well, as I stood on the beach waving him off in his canoe, I really felt totally abandoned. It was rumoured that a boat, which we hoped was going to be carrying some rice for us, was coming to the west, but we didn't have any definite news of when or even if it would arrive over the weekend. And we didn't know if it did come, would it definitely have our order on, because everybody else had ordered rice too. And if we dug up any small bits of cassava and potato, we might have enough for one last meal on Saturday lunchtime, and then that was it. Well, you can imagine how hard I prayed before I went to sleep that night. And when I woke up on Saturday morning, with still no plan B if the boat hadn't come, the first thing... Let me put that one back on for the moment. Is that okay? So when I woke up on Saturday morning, the first thing that I did was to read the Bible verses in Daily Light. And it's one of those books which gives you a series of Bible verses and the date for each day, and you read the particular verses there. And as I read the Bible verses for that day, one verse simply jumped off the page and hit me. And it was Psalm 111, verse 5. Because that verse said, "He, God, provides food for those who trust in him." Well, I'd never knowingly read that Bible verse before, and I've never forgotten it since. And I'd never connected the idea of God providing food with trusting in God. But I knew that I was trusting and that there was nothing else to do at that stage. So I got up, rushed out, telling people that they could expect food that day, and sent the school canoe off to the nearest port where the boat might call. And I waited while the last bits of food were cooked for lunch. It was a long wait because it was several hours before the canoe finally arrived back, laden with sacks of rice and tins of biscuits, enough for the next 2 or 3 weeks. When the headmaster returned with one tiny bag of rice, the only rice he could find in Gizo, I was able to tell him that we did have food again. And it was certainly not only me giving thanks to God that weekend for his amazing provision just at the very right time. Now, all of Psalm 111 praises and thanks God for the way in which God acts in history to care for his people and to provide for them. The theme of the psalm is the greatness of God's work. In the Old Testament, understanding of God is usually demonstrated through what God does rather than through any description of what God's like. The psalm mentions only a few specific examples of God's work, including the way in which God provided food for his people in the wilderness. And that's where verse 5 comes in, of course. In the second verse, it suggests that the works of the Lord are especially meaningful to those who delight in the Lord. Those who have faith already are better able to discern the presence of God in those events of everyday life, just as Naaman learnt to do. And even more exciting for us, just as we still can do today, we see God at work and continue to thank God for all that he does for us. So this story of Jesus healing 10 men with leprosy took place hundreds of years after the healing of Naaman, but I think we can immediately see some obvious connections and similarities between the two. First of all, of course, both stories tell us about people being cured of leprosy, or what the Bible, Good News Bible, describes as a dreaded skin disease. Although the leprosy of the Bible wasn't necessarily always the disease we call leprosy today, still an incurable chronic skin disease was always something that was very much dreaded by people because of the stigma attached to it and the exclusion from society. But both stories, too, we can see, demonstrate the great power of God to heal and help. In this case, God's power to overcome multiple cases of leprosy and to make it possible for people to go back and live in their own communities and mix with others again. Then when we look at Psalm 111 alongside the two stories, the psalm gives us a broader picture of God's mighty acts of power in establishing Israel as God's people, and sets these individual acts of healing in that wider context of God's ongoing commitment to the total, complete well-being of his people. So in all three stories, we remember that we worship a powerful, a mighty God. And we remember that we worship a God who acts in history to help us, his people. Like the Israelites of old, we understand more about God and we know more about God when we see that what God does, when we see how he acts. Now, both stories also center on a foreigner, of course. Naaman was not only not an Israelite, but he was the one who'd actually led successful wars against Israel. And we know that in New Testament times, the Samaritans and the Jews disliked each other and disagreed with each other. And yet, despite the fact that Naaman and the Samaritan didn't belong to God's chosen people, we see that both of them were helped and healed. By the time Luke wrote this story in the New Testament, in his book, the early church would almost certainly have included Samaritans alongside Jews. And so this story affirms their place in the church community. After his cure, we know that Naaman recognized the God of Israel as the only true God. And so we also see that we worship a God whose care and concern and love extends to everybody that he has created, quite regardless of race, a God who loves and cares for everyone. And both stories, of course, are examples of God's gift of healing, and with that healing, the opportunity for people to return to society and normality. Those are very valuable gifts, life-changing gifts. And valuable gifts point to the importance of the giver, the need to say thanks to the giver, and usually the desire to reciprocate in some kind of way. Naaman, we know, tried to pay Elisha, who refused his money, as he realized that Naaman seemed to be trying to pay for his healing rather than accepting it as a gift from God. Of the group of 10 men healed by Jesus, it was only the Samaritan who returned to say thank you. And his reaction suggests that he was more sensitive to Jesus' deed and to its life-changing impact, in contrast to the others in the group whose focus was more on themselves. Now, now, of course, our church life is all about gifts. God's gift in Christ, the gift of God's love, the gift of the Holy Spirit, and much, much, much more. So we also remember that we worship a God who continually gives us good gifts. A God who's mighty and powerful, a God who acts in history to help his people, a God who loves and cares for everyone he's created, and a God who continually gives us good gifts. Surely when we look at that amazing list of just some of the wonderful things that God does for us, like Naaman and the Samaritan, we realise that there is a need for us to respond to God. So what does our response need to be? First, I think, we need to realise where our help and healing and salvation come from. We need to realise that those things come from God himself. We don't deserve God's gifts, and we can't buy them and we can't earn them. We can only humbly accept them. Then secondly, we can respond by thanking God for all that he does for us. Thanking him not only with our lips, but also with our lives. How do we do that? Well, that brings us to a third thought about responding. We do it surely by obeying God, serving him, following his way and his plans for us. Naaman had to learn the hard way that it was necessary to obey if God was going to help him. If we want to obey, surely we have first to invite God to be Lord of our lives, and then we have to live our lives in God's way, and we have to follow his plans. And finally, just like Naaman's young servant girl, we'll want to tell others about God and what God can do for them. So there are many ways in which we need to respond. And today, as we think of everything that God has done for us, let's respond by thanking him with our lips, but most especially with our lives.